Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Naked Englishman podcast. I'm Richard Vobes. This is the audio diary of my life. I feel like I'm a bit late doing this today, but it may not be. Depends on when you listen, I guess. It's the 2nd of July, 2025. I was going to say it's Tuesday, but I think yesterday was Tuesday, wasn't it? It's Wednesday today. The lovely voice from upstairs has just clarified Wednesday today, of course. 2nd of July, and it's just after 8 o'clock in the morning. The cat has had some food. I'm just seeing if this other food that I've got ready for him is ready, and it does appear to be. I'm just giving it a squish in this little sachet, and the cat is rounding on me, going, "Where's my breakfast?" So I shall just quickly give him some feed. Yesterday was, it was a hot day yesterday, wasn't it? I don't know if you felt that where you are. We had wall-to-wall sunshine down here, pretty much, until, I suppose, later into the evening. And then it rained last night, which was very nice. It came down at about 4:30, and it was just at the tail end of the rain and everything. Here we go, puss. And everything was damp, and there was little dribblings coming from... Oh, I've just fed you, now you turn... You turn your bloody nose up at it, cat. You are a pain, aren't you? Absolute pain. Well, I'm not wasting it because we don't have very much of it. So, tough titty. That's all I can say to you. Let me just shove that in the frigid. Yes. So, I did some writing yesterday. Oh, there's a fly in the sink. There's a dead fly in the water. How extraordinary. Maybe that isn't extraordinary. As I think I've mentioned before, the cat food attracts the flies. I'm just washing this bowl up a bit. But I will get back to you in a second. So get some fresh water in here. Julia very kindly was Meals on Wheels. She went down to her mum's. She went to the farm shop and cooked, selected some lovely food. She went down to pick up her eldest son, who had been staying at her at his nan's. And on the way back, having cooked a meal for her mum, she dropped in a meal for me, which was lovely. And so I lit the Essie, but I just carried on working on another book that I'm working on, my pipe book. Which is slowly taking shape. It's a funny old thing, this writing business. The Biggleswick book had a very clear direction, I suppose, because it started out as an allegory on the videos that I do a couple of years ago, and then so I knew where it was going. It was filling in the 400 pages. To work out how do you get from A to B, and also make it interesting, and also make it plausible, and make it full of truth bombs, as much as I can say that they're true. You know, it's all wrapped up in a fictitious story. So people can say, well, it's rubbish, and that's fine. They can say it's rubbish, and they can say it's badly written. But to me, it's an achievement. To get through it, so people can say whatever they damn well like. I'm not claiming, even though I do believe that these things are true, but I'm not saying in that instance everything is true. But I think it's worth considering. But with the pipe book, I wanted to write the book really because I saw that actually there's a sort of flourishing potential. A market of new pipe smokers, there's new pipe makers, there's a behind the scenes and out of view, really. There are these pipe makers, there are pipe smokers, there are people who are not taking the government warnings the way the government would like them to. Many of them don't necessarily understand the benefits of nicotine, or even believe that nicotine is good for you, but they enjoy a pipe, and the other benefits that they get from pipe smoking is what makes them take the risk, if not that I believe there is a risk, but makes them take what they perceive as a risk, and that is that, you know, we're always told smoking's bad for you, but smoking a pipe, hell of a lot less bad in their eyes, because you don't take it down, it's better quality tobacco, and you don't smoke as many bowls a day as you would perhaps when people are smoking, you know, 20 fags a day straightly injected into their lungs and all the rest of it. Even though research on all of that smoking has shown that the trials that they did and the research that was carried out to try and prove the connection between lung cancer and smoking is very dubious and, in fact, very biased. And there are a couple of books, one, Smoke Screens, I think, by Richard White. The other one, I forget the title and the author, but I've got it on my computer. That one is a PDF that came out similar sort of time. Demonstrates, you have, you know, it's a leap of faith whether you trust it or not. But I always take, whenever the government is desperately trying to tell you, push you in one direction, and we saw that with the vaccine, that if you go in one direction with the government pushing you, and my God, they, you know, they are so determined not to have you smoking, and you think, why is that? They were so determined for you to take a vaccine, and you think, why is that? And we know that they're not on your side and they're not actually working for your benefit, then you realise there's got to be something in this smoking thing. There's got to be something in this nicotine that is actually beneficial. And then, of course, you know, people like Dr. Brian Ardis, who's not allowed to say these things on national television, but can say them on places like Rumble and others, says, does his research and says, actually, it turns out the nicotine's not addictive and actually is incredibly beneficial for you. And it disrupts the spike protein as well on the vaccines and things. So it's a good all-rounder. Anyway, so to come back to the pipe book, I didn't want to get into that side of things on my book. I didn't want to get into the sort of conspiracy stuff. I just thought there is a market of people who might enjoy a light-hearted book that celebrates pipe smoking. And as I started this, I realised that perhaps one story wasn't enough. It would be a series of short stories, which is what I'm working on. And sometimes it's, I think, with the stories that I've been working on, I wasn't quite sure where they're going and how they are structured. It's just a question of saying, really, to the subconscious mind, I'm writing this, can you help me? And I just keep writing until suddenly you start to see the structure and you go, ah, oh yeah, I see the story now. I see the plot, or I see the whatever it is. And that was the case yesterday as I was writing. I thought, well, I just don't know where this is going. I'm just writing it that, like the characters, I'm enjoying the situation they're in, and putting in little bits of conflict, because characters need conflict to make stories interesting, of course. And then suddenly I started to get this notion. Ah, so the first draft is very rough. But, of course, you go back and you go, I'll rework this. I know where I'm going with it. So the second, so this is the third story I'm working on. And I started to get the concept of that. The second story, completely different setting, different characters, of course, very short at the moment. And then I realised, you know, you go for a walk and ideas pop into your head and you go, what should I do with that? And then other suggestions came into that in order to help you celebrate or explore the wonders of pipe smoking, because principally that's who's going to buy the book, and it would be a great gift. Hopefully a great gift, but it's a gift for people who have friends and relations who smoke pipes, because there's always, you know, you can always buy them another pipe or buy them another tin of tobacco, but there's very few literature, there's very little literature out there that celebrates these sort of things. And so a pipe book, it struck me as being something that lots of people could buy for their friends and relations. And so and of course one has to be very clever, as much as one can be clever. I never claim to be terribly clever, but one has to be, say, go, where's the market for the book? I like writing. Where's the market? And so that's why I wrote Biggleswick for the conspiracy truth freedom people, which hopefully they'll enjoy and take from it what they want. And with the pipe one, hopefully they'll do the same. So that's that. I want to go back to my Second World War story, which was originally aimed at children. And I've been thinking about that because it's I think it's a it can be a reflection of today, telling the story of this remembrances of a woman when she was young in the Second World War. And I think that could be, I mean, obviously she'd be very old now if it was set today, but so I assume that it must be set, she's writing this story, I suppose, in the 1970s or 80s even, but she's writing of the 1940s, so she'd be writing, well, maybe, how old would she be? It is 80 years ago, isn't it? 90 years ago, 85 years ago, something like that. 85 years ago, so she would be quite old. So it is, well, and then she's what? The girl is about, so she would have to be over 100 to be writing the story now because she would be of a certain age. She's about 13, I suppose, 12, 13 in the Second World War. So that makes her very old. So maybe she's writing the story in the 90s of a time when she was in the 1940s, and she's, anyway, you know, I'm just trying to sort of work out. So these sort of things, but I want to make it for an adult audience because I think that one can put in for the readers who would be reading now some parallels to the problems that we have, which is reflected in the problems which were so bleeding obvious back in the 1940s with aeroplanes flying over dropping bombs. And I think one could just add a bit of reflection for the invisible bombs that we're dropped on now, that we're continually dropped on, anyway, I'm losing myself into trying to explain the rationale behind it, but there is a rationale. Anyway, I think that there's a lovely story there to be told, and I've already written a rough draft, which for some reason there's two versions of it, and one version was better completed than the second version, but I can't seem to find it, but it'll be on my hard drive somewhere. Anyway, I've waffled on a lot about the writing today. It's overcast now and a bit hazy, and the rain has gone. I don't know where she's gone somewhere. So today I've got an interview to. I'm on somebody else's podcast talking about the wonders or the perils of AI, and I'm thinking about my video today, which I think will be talking about the human condition, because my fear is we are losing our skill sets with things like AI, and we are just allowing things to disappear. I mean, it's a theme I often talk about, but hopefully I've got a different approach. Maybe, I don't know, maybe it's the same old approach. But I do think of my videos that sometimes it is that drip drip message. It's just continually getting people to look at things from perhaps a different perspective. Maybe people look at this at their perspective. Maybe it's completely unnecessary, but people do tell me they enjoy the videos. And I'm enjoying the I'm funnily enough enjoying more the philosophical self-discovery videos that I do, and discovering that because it makes me think a lot more. And I've moved, as you will know, from the "Oh look what they have just done, let's be scared together" videos. I don't need to do that really, because I don't think that's certainly not the answer, and it's all about bloody great distraction. And it does irk me that supposedly enlightened fellow YouTubers just go down the easiest route to get an audience, and the easiest way to make money is by scaring the heck out of them with their thumbnails and stuff, instead of actually looking to what do we do to get out of it, what do we need, what are the solutions. And most of them don't want to do that. Maybe they can't think of the solutions. Maybe they don't know what the solutions are. Maybe they think they're too boring for people. And maybe the audience don't want to know. And that's another thing, of course. People, it seems to me, and there seems to be a lot in the movement, if you want to call it a movement, that just want to be continually frightened. They want to have something to moan at. They don't really want to make a stand, and that's very irksome. I asked the audience when we were at the Sounds Beautiful Festival in my talk, I asked them, look, this is a truth festival, isn't it? Be truthful with me. How many people go to the supermarket? And half the room, half the marquee put their hands up.
Oh, but it's okay, it's Waitrose.
And they said, yeah, it's okay, it's Waitrose. And
go for organic.
And you just think, well, then they have been brainwashed. You know, it's hard, isn't it? But we are in a game of survival, not in a game of what's the least I can do and then still keep the life I've gone. I think people have got to get to the point where they realise the old life they've had is gone, because that was a lie anyway. The old life of just going down to the supermarket and thinking that they're all your friends and everything. The mask is off, and you only have to look. You can see the mask. You can see the 5G masts have gone up. You can see the surveillance cameras. We know that facial recognition is out there. We know they talk about it all the time. They're going to dim the sky because they want to get rid of the sun. I mean, come on. When will people actually wake up and go, oh, yeah, that's not a good policy? When will the fact that they will follow you about with the cameras and know exactly who you are and what you're doing, take away all private transactions so everything is known by the state. Is that a good policy? You know, this is now a question of survival, not a question of what's the least line of resistance that I can do. We have to make a stand individually or you will die. It's as simple as that, really. At the end of the day, you will end up dead, because going to the supermarket and eating supermarket food, as much as it tastes nice and you think, oh, it doesn't matter, I'll just have that other bit of chocolate now, or I'll have that this, that and the other, it will kill you, because it is killing you. It will give you that cancer 2, 5, 10 years down the line, and you'll go, oh, I've got cancer now, I don't know where that came from, because I'd been going to Waitrose or wherever, whichever supermarket you want to name, and I'm not saying specifically those items individually, but the collection of that style of not looking after oneself is likely to sneak up behind you, whereas the survivor is going to say, no, actually I'm not taking that risk, and I'm not taking that line of least resistance. I am actually going to just get up and make a stand. But people have been so brainwashed and going, well, I'm not going to make the journey. And unless you make a stand, what else, you know, you may as well just lie down now. But people will think that that is too extreme, and I appreciate that. People will think that is far too extreme a view to have, and it may be. And I'm not saying I'm right, I'm just saying, in my opinion, this is a game of survival, and everything is pitched against you apart from your own wits. And so sharpen your wits, is what I'm saying. Sharpen your wits. Really think about the things one does and say, is this going to help or is it going to hinder in the long run? And a lot of those things that have been marketed as help may not be helping at all. They may actually be in disguise the big bad wolf in Red Robin Hood, riding Robin Hood, whatever the sodding name of the woman is, in her hood. Or
Red
in a
Riding Hood.
Yes, Red Riding Hood's hood, or the granny's clothes, whatever it is, you know, whatever, however the story goes. The big bad wolf is in disguise as that benevolent kind thing, telling you in the fairy tales what's happening. Thank you for listening. If you did, if you didn't, if you put the thing down and said, I'm not listening to that, Vobes, well, don't blame you. It's a tough one. Take care. Bye for now.